Welcome to Morph Into a New You, part of MHNRnetwork.com. Your host, Johnny Calloway, is the author of several books, including Taming the Dragon, Dragons to Butterflies, The Metamorphosis of a Man, and The Bridge. He will be having conversations with people from all walks of life. Healing really is an inside job that transforms you to become a better version of you. We must change our self-talk and inner dialogue so we can start to believe. A special thanks to our sponsor, Meaningful Expressions, at m-expressions.com. They can take a concept, thought, or personal brand and turn it into a visual masterpiece that you can use to raise awareness about your passion or cause. They've certainly done that with our podcast website. And thank you for joining Johnny as you morph into a new you.
Hello, everybody. I'm Johnny Calloway, host of Morph Into a New You, where we believe changing a thought changes a life. And I am excited today, again, once again, we have my dear friend, Dr. Eric Gentry, with us, and we're going to talk about what I consider to be a pretty hot topic, about how we deal with our mental health issues in our 12-step rooms. So we're going to talk about PTSD, bipolar, ADD, ADHD, whatever that we're taking medication for, and how we sit in the rooms of the 12 steps and feel like we can have a voice. Eric, what do you want to say about that?
Well, there's a lot of targets there. So thinking about the topic, there is a passage from the Apocrypha, from the Gospel of Thomas, that I wrote a song about that has always been really special to me. And I think it's kind of a cornerstone of recovery. And that quote from the Gospel of Thomas is, "Bring forth that which is in you, and that which is in you will save you. Fail to bring forth that which is in you, and that which is in you will destroy you."
Wow.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
Oh, man. That's right on target with my whole belief system. That is cool.
And so what I'm really clear about is that I shared myself alive in the rooms. You know, I did not have a self when I came into the rooms. I was a collection of coping strategies. I didn't know who I was. And the more that I shared in meetings, the more that I became, and getting that reflected back, having somebody that would hear me and nod their head and that I could look into their eyes and I could see love and kindness in their eyes, is that started, I started to be something that was firm and real that I didn't have. And I could have been diagnosed with any of those disorders that you identified there. I met diagnostic criteria for all of those when I first came in the rooms. What I look back now and see that it was developmental trauma. And, you know, I've treated, I don't know, 1,000 people with borderline that are diagnosed with bipolar affective disorder. And, you know, I have not treated anybody of those 1,000 people that didn't have a history of trauma.
Wow. That's amazing. And the thing you were talking about once you first came to the 12-step rooms and finding that, I'm going to sum it up with connection, finding that connection. One of the things that I just wrote in a blog I did about finding my voice is that true identification fosters hope. And one of my greatest joys in life is when I share in a meeting somewhere, when I speak at a meeting or when I do a class, and somebody from the audience says, "Yeah, me too. I did that. I thought that. I felt that." Because what I see when they do that, what I see, physically seeing them when they do that, is that hope coming alive. And one of the other things, I think it was in that blog that I wrote, is depression is the epitome of hopelessness and hope is its only antidote. And when we can bring that hope to someone and open that space, and I can't tell you how many times I've used that thing that you talked about in our first talk about PTSD, about when a child is traumatized, they are robbed of hope. And our job is to help bring hope to their life. I love that. I love that because in that place of hope, we can start to have a life. And not just be reactionary to everything that comes up. But as far as in the rooms, I know after I speaking about our diagnoses in the rooms, I know I've always been one to say what I need to say, however I need to say it. But I will say that after I came out of my crash in 2008, and I had been to the mental health center, and then I had been to the homeless center, and then I was interjected back into the rooms, I found myself shutting down quite a bit about what I needed to say, because I felt almost, now here's a place in the 12-step rooms, they're my foundation for everything. Everything I stand on, everything I live by came from what I learned in those rooms. And all of a sudden, because I have this diagnosis and I'm taking this medication, I felt like an outsider sometimes. And that robbed me of some of my hope. So how do we tell somebody that's battling with that? How do we tell them to deal with that, Eric?
Who? So it's nuanced. I think what is causing the distress that all of us in the rooms feel when we're about to share, and we got something burning inside of us that needs to come out, and we choke it back. The reason for that is because I was hurt in my developmental relationships. And I have, in the same way that a combat veteran is afraid of loud noises, I am afraid of the judgment, the disapproval, the disconnect of somebody, of another person. I'm scared of people. And so what happens is that I choke back what needs to come out because I'm so terrified about what you think of me.
Well, and as you're saying that, I'm tying that back into what you opened us up with from, was it Thomas, about that which is within you. So could you say that again? That needs to be repeated.
Yeah, bring forth that which is in you, and that which is in you will save you. Fail to bring forth that which is in you, and that which is in you will destroy you.
I promise you that will go in one of my books at some point, because that is good stuff. Because what happens to me, and what I watch happen in our 12-step rooms all the time, is when we shut it down and we start keeping it a secret, and we shut ourselves off from that thing that is killing us, we rob ourselves of hope. You know, and
it's spiritual cancer.
Yeah, wow, I love that. The thing for me, because my theme on Morph Into a New You this entire month is finding your voice. But in the process of preparing for this month, one of the things I realized is one of the places where I still shut down because I'm afraid of what people are going to think is my spiritual beliefs, my deeper spiritual beliefs that are rooted in A Course in Miracles, because they're not the norm. And I don't want to put that out there and then people go, oh, man, he is off the charts, nuts. I don't mind them saying I'm nuts about my bipolar. I'm okay with that. But about my deeply rooted spiritual beliefs, I tend to keep those to myself, except for my close friends. And I made a commitment to myself this year, that's stopping. I'm going to share it. If you think I'm crazy, then hopefully you got a sponsor you can talk to about it. And there goes our friend Ed again. But, yeah, I'd really like that statement about that which is within you will save you.
It's kind of a long and poetic way to say we're only as sick as our secrets.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
Which is kind of, you know, what happens in the rooms is that we're so afraid of other people that it becomes really terrifying to bring forth that which is in me. It is a terrifying thing. I know for the first year that I shared in meetings, I didn't look anybody in the eye. I shared to the floor. You know, it took me a year of being in the rooms before I could start to look around at other people while I was sharing. I couldn't read. I could memorize the readings, and if I was called on, I could do the readings from memory. But if we were reading something out of a book, I could not. I was so scared of other people's judgment of me that I couldn't read.
You know, I had a reverse situation with that sick as your secrets thing. It was really odd. I was in a group therapy setting, and the therapist was working with this one, I'm going to say patient. And at one point he told her, he said, well, you know, you're only sick as your secrets. And when he did, I scoffed. I went, ah. And he said, what are you laughing at? I said, because that's bullshit. He said, what do you mean that's bullshit? I said, I don't have any secrets and I'm still sick. He said, what do you mean you don't have any secrets? I said, I really seriously cannot think of one thing that I've done in my life that I haven't told somebody. And he looked like I'd thrown a bucket of water on him. And he sat there for a couple of minutes, and then he looked at me and he said, oh, I know. You tell everybody all the crap you've done, all the darkness of you, but you never let anybody know the light of you. That's your secret. He said, what do you aspire to be? I said, I don't know. I knew exactly what I wanted to be. But I could not, I could tell you that I robbed stores. I could tell you I broke in my family's houses. I could tell you all of that. But I could not tell you what I dreamed for. And he said, what do you want to be? And very meekly, I whispered to that group, I want to be an author. And he said, oh my God, why can't you let us know that? And that was such a turnaround for me, because at that point he said, you got homework between now and next week. You're going to write something and you're going to bring it in here and read it to us. And what I wrote ended up being the third chapter of my first book.
And that's beautiful.
But yeah, he caught that. So I had the secrets, but it was easy for me to tell you how much of a jerk I had been. But I couldn't tell you about nice things I had done or when I tried to, you know what I'm saying?
I absolutely. That is, you know, that whole, the way I've heard that said in the rooms is that I have a low tolerance for prosperity. You know, I can handle hardship.
Man, some of the stuff we come up with in those rooms is just priceless, man. Priceless.
I can handle things hard, but, you know, let things get good for a little while and I start jumping out of my skin, because right. I'm waiting for the next bad thing to happen, you know. And as I've been around for a little while and done a lot of work, I've learned how to start to relax into my fear and have a better quality of life. I was thinking about some literature from the fellowship that I attend. I've always just, you know, it's kind of like the Buddhists have the koans. You know, what's the sound of one hand clapping? That's a koan, you know, that they would send the bodhisattvas to spend a year meditating silently that doesn't have an answer to help them to get to enlightenment. Well, I've always thought this was a pretty good koan in recovery. And it says that honest sharing is the antidote to our diseased thinking.
Mm.
And, you know, everything's in that. Because what addiction is for me, it's separation. Addiction is disconnect. It's where I'm so scared, I'm struggling with everything, that I can't reach out and use relationships, connection with another person to manage what's going on with me. So I peel off and I go do something secretive and self-destructive. That process of sharing and being reflected back and having empathy and warmth, what happens with that is that that gives me back my connection with humanity, back my connection with my God. And what happens with then is that all of the Ways and Means Committee, all of my scheming, all of the thoughts that are in my head that I don't want to have dissipate, and I'm at peace.
Right.
You know, and I remember early in recovery, the first time that happened, when, you know, we talk about the 500 pound phone, and I was sitting on my hands to not get high. And, you know, that there was no way that I was not going to go get high. And I picked up a phone and I called somebody, and I stammered and stumbled and I didn't know what to say. And it was awkward, but we talked and we ended up talking about cars or something. It wasn't even about recovery. And we just, you know, talked for 5 minutes or so. But what happens when I hung up that phone? A, I didn't want to get high. And B, I didn't feel crazy. And, you know, that's happened every single time when I reach out and share honestly with another person. It is the antidote. It's how I get peace and freedom from the shit that's going on inside of me. Pardon my language.
You know, that is so amazing, because I've had people ask me, I have no idea how many times, if I still believe in hell. And absolutely, I believe in hell. But what hell is for me is when I'm disconnected from my higher power, from my source, and from my fellow man. Because in that place, I'm alone. I'm an island. And there's no hope in that place. As long as I'm connected, there's hope and there's life and there's empathy and all those other good things that live within us. That when we are not connected, we shut down and we hide and we keep them. And in the darkness, they die. In the light, they flourish. And when I'm connected, like this conversation, every time you and I have one of these conversations, I get off here and I'm high, man. I'm high sometimes for 2 or 3 days after you and I have a conversation, because my soul, yeah, my soul is alive when I'm talking about the things that matter, not only to me, but to the world. And it's just unfortunate that a lot of people don't know that they matter. But yeah, that connect. And so the flip side of what is hell, disconnection, the flip side is what is heaven, and that's connection, because that's when I'm alive and living.
And that's the antidote to the disease of addiction, I'm pretty sure, is connecting and sharing honestly with another human being. Then I am given freedom from all of that stuff, that, you know, all of those coping strategies that I've used through my whole life to be able to survive. I'm no longer in my kind of animal nature. I am connected to spirit. I'm connected to another human being. And I'm now able to go forward from that place being authentic and intentional, instead of being a dope fiend, instead of trying to manage things that are beyond my control and power. I just love that, the way that the first step and the first tradition connect in that, you know, that personal recovery depends upon the unity of us, that you can't recover as an I. You can only recover as a we.
Yeah, there's no hope there.
And that there's no, you can't do it. I mean, it's physiologically, that's what the cool stuff about the science presently is showing us, that physiologically you can't do it. That the connection is the way that you dial down your arousal enough that you can have the part of your brain that is connected to spirit, that's able to think intentional thoughts. You stay on your own and you stay jacked up, and you're just unable to stop yourself from going to the chocolate cake or the pornography or the heroin or the spending or whatever it is that is compulsive, that soothes me back down to where I can cope with my life. The antidote to compulsivity is that connection.
Right. We talk in our meetings about whichever meeting you're going to, it doesn't matter. We talk in the 12 step rooms, I'll put it that way, about the diseased mind and the voice of the diseased mind. And I think for me, I know, but I think for everyone actually, is when I am shutting myself down, I'm listening to that voice, because I think that darkness, that diseased voice knows that when I connect, it's on its way out. And almost like I'm in a chess game with it. It's like, so when I had a rule for myself very early on in my recovery, whenever I thought I couldn't tell somebody something, it became a must to tell it. I don't care how crazy it was. I had to share it with somebody. And 99.9% of the time, as soon as I said it out loud, I saw the insanity of it before the other person had to say anything. But we want to shut it down. We want to keep it within. And for me, tying back into what we're trying to talk about here, when I'm in a meeting or when I'm at a dinner or a coffee with my friends from the fellowships, and I feel like I can't say, hey, man, you know what? I think my medications may be off. I don't know. Now, I struggle myself with that sometimes as to whether or not that's something that needs to actually be said in a meeting, but it needs to be said to somebody. Because once I bring it out, somebody can say, you know, Johnny, some of that stuff that you're thinking is crazy is just what we all go through, because that's been very real for me. I'll blow something up in my head. I'll be like, oh, no, oh, no, oh, no. And then when I say it to somebody, they're like, Johnny, I do the same thing. I go through the same stuff. And then that connection, I'm like, well, you know what? Maybe that is just being human, and maybe that's not even a part of me being bipolar. But when I think I can't say it, I got to say it.
It's good. It's really good. I was thinking about what you were talking about, the thoughts in your head that magnify and become, you know, what we call them in the mental health field is command hallucinations, where, you know, my brain is telling me that I need to do this. I got to have this or I can't cope. And, you know, one of the things that's been really cool is to be alive in the field that I work in right now, especially in trauma, is that we're learning stuff like daily that is just changing everything. It's really alive, and a lot of science that we've got now the apparatus to be able to look at brain functioning in ways that we could never before. And so one of the things that I've learned in the past year is what's happening in most of my clients' heads are not thoughts. What you're describing is not a thought. It's an intrusion. It is me perceiving something as threatening in my life. And what happens is when my energy jacks up in my body because I'm perceiving a threat, my brain functioning diminishes. So what starts happening is in the same way that, again, using combat veterans, as they get hypervigilant when they're at McDonald's because they can't control the environment, they don't know what's going to happen, is we got hypervigilant thoughts, that those thoughts intrude, and those thoughts, while they're destructive, are always trying to help us to get out of situations that are perceivedly dangerous or threatening or uncomfortable. But what's been really cool is to learn that when I relax the muscles in my body for 3 or 4 seconds, is that the frontal lobe and the temporal lobe, the two parts of the brain that are required to make a thought, you got to create language to have a thought. You got to intentionally manipulate language to turn it into what you want it to say inside, instead of just having a voice that's talking to me aggressively and saying harsh and critical things to me. That just dissipates when you learn to do the 11th step. When you relax the muscles in your body and seek the will of a power greater than yourself, then what happens is now you got a brain again that can think intentional thoughts rather than what I did for so many years, which was just muscle my way through those thoughts in my head, those events that were happening inside of my head.
I am working currently on putting together a class for the Salvation Army here in Sarasota called Morph Into a New You, Change a Thought, Change a Life. And it's about changing that. What I was hearing you talk about as you were talking about that is that internal dialogue where we talk to ourselves like we're a piece of crap and we just buy it. We just buy it and we operate from it. And a lot of times we don't ever really investigate, do I really believe that? I mean, I've run my whole life based on this belief system, but do I really believe that? Does that make any sense? And so in this workshop or class I'm putting together, it's about, you know, we talk in the 4th and the 10th step about taking a personal inventory. And in my mind, action is the effect of a thought. If we're having all these effects and we're never inventorying the thoughts that drive them, then we're just changing the action. But if we inventory the thought and we're like, well, this is why I do this, and this is what thought drives that, then I think there's hope for real change and not just swapping behaviors one for the other. I'm really excited about doing this class because in my 33 years now of being involved in the 12 steps, what I've discovered is we inventory the action. And it takes a long time and a lot of work to inventory what drives the action. What made me think that picking up or going to gamble was going to fix what I thought I was in? What made me think going and buying 3 large pizzas was going to make me feel better? Let's look at that thought. That makes sense to you, Eric?
It sure does. That what's been really cool is to help people to interrupt their threat response. Because, you know, what's happened in our world today is that we have so much trauma in our lives that we, you know, we've survived some, but what we've learned about trauma is that you don't have to survive trauma to get traumatized. And we've witnessed more trauma than any generation ever on the planet. That, you know, we're constantly bombarded with trauma. All you got to do is turn on the TV and you are constantly bombarded with just all kinds of that. What that's done is that has elevated our arousal level, that we're the safest generation to ever live on the planet, and we are the most afraid generation to ever live on the planet. And we're all jacked up, and we call it stress. We all say that we got stressful lives. Your life's not stressful. Nobody has a stressful life. Nobody has a stressful job. What's happening is that they're just perceiving a lot of threat. And when you perceive threat, your body jacks up. That's what it does. And we call it, and we we think that it's an external causation. But, you know, as we mature, we start to learn this stuff, we can start to see that, wait a minute, it's not the world out there that's doing that to me. It's the way my body is responding when I'm in that state. Because when I'm in that state, when I'm perceiving threat and my threat response is going haywire, it jacks the energy up in my body and I feel horrible. I'm just distressed and I'm compelled to get the hell out of that state. And that's where the pizzas come from. And that's where the gambling comes from. And that's where the you know, all of those compulsivity things are about trying to soothe this dysregulated amount of energy in my body because I'm constantly perceiving threats. And as you teach people to interrupt that simply by releasing the muscles in their body for 1 or 2 seconds and doing that several hundred times a day, just softening, then what happens is you got your brain comes back online and you get your thinker back and you're able to cogitate in the way you choose to cogitate instead of having to muscle and fight your way through all of these internal voices that are constantly saying damning and harsh and critical things to you. They fall back into the background as I'm in a relaxed body. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah. That's
pretty cool that it's that simple.
Right. Well, and it is simple. Simple does not equate to easy, though.
It ain't easy.
Retraining the brain, retraining our thought process is not easy. Especially, I know for myself, I had learned how to use, oh my God, the lies in my mind to justify the behavior that I wanted to do. So I could say, if you'd grown up the way I did, you'd be a drug addict also. Which may well be so. But when I learned to justify my behavior through my story, it made changing the story that much more difficult. Because when I take away the justification, I don't get to act that way anymore. So, God, there's so much, man, that in what we're talking about. I know one of the biggest parts of my personal recovery has been learning how to change that inner dialogue, to reparent myself, to become a loving parent, and to not be that condemning, critical parent that was always telling me, you'll never make it. You can't do that. And for me in particular, it's like, who told you you could write a book? I still struggle with that. Who are you? The thing is, I'm Johnny Calloway, and I'm somebody that's got a desire and a passion, and I'm willing to do the work to pursue it. That's who I am. But changing that, I would never want to tell anybody it's easy, but I will tell everybody it's simple.
Amen. Amen.
So I want to do a little role playing here with you for our audience. You're going to be the sponsor, which you have been for me, by the way, and I cannot tell you how much you helped me when you were. And today, these shows that we do, I walk away from these shows and I'm revitalized every time we do one of these shows. But you're my sponsor. I'm the sponsee. I'm kind of new to the program. We're just going to play this out. I've also got bipolar and I'm also taking medication and I am jacked up all the time with anxiety. And in our rooms, we hear you got to talk about what's going on. What would you tell me? What would you tell me where to take that? What to do with that?
So the first thing I would say is, well, Johnny, why don't you lay it all out? Tell me everything that's going on.
Okay. Now, in the role play, I'm going to say, man, I cannot sit. I remember when I was going through that, although I had several double-digit years in the program when I got slammed by panic attacks and anxiety, and I would go to this guy that I was using as a sponsor, and I would tell him everything that was going on. The whole time I'm jumping up and down and can't be still, and when I would get through telling him, he'd say, you need to meditate. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm running 90 miles an hour with my feet nailed to the floor, and you want me to go ohm? No, I can't do that. But what I did end up discovering was that by telling someone how the racing thoughts were killing me, how I couldn't sleep, I will never forget, and I think I've probably mentioned this every time you and I have done a show, I will never forget when I sat in your office that day and I told you everything that was going on. Everything that was going on, crying my eyes out. And when I was done, you said, man, you're not going to like what I got to say. And I said, it probably means I need to hear it. And you said, man, you don't know who God is. And until you get God in this mix, I tear up every time I remember this, man. Until you get God in this mix, you're going to stay up in nuts. And then you told me to start writing letter, or you told me to write a letter to me from God. And I did it every day for over 5 years. And I will never forget the next week when I came back with like 10 of those letters. And you looked at me with that smile that you got on right now. And you said, man, you really are an addict. I told you to write a letter. You got a book here. But today I realized that what I was doing in writing those loving, encouraging, gentle letters to me from the God of my understanding, I was reparenting myself. And I was changing my inner dialogue. And mine was so messed up that it took every day for 5 years to get that turned around where I could be a fully functioning member of our society. And that's how I think of myself today. Yes, I'm bipolar. Yes, I'm a drug addict. Yes, I'm an alcoholic. Yes, I have to take medication. But I have a business. I do these podcasts. I've written 3 books. I'm a fully functioning member in our society, even with those things. So I'm not saying that in any way to brag, but I hope the audience can hear that there's hope. You can do whatever you want if you're willing to do the work.
And get out of your way.
Oh, big time. Get out of your own damn way. Get out of your own way. So
let me unpack what just happened at the beginning of that, because it's really important. If anybody's listening to this from a 12-step fellowship, you know, one of the things that happens is in the sponsor-sponsee relationship, I think, you know, and I've been in some of these relationships, and they didn't last very long until I found a good sponsor. But what happens a lot is, you know, we're anxious around other people. That's why we go to these fellowships, is that we're scared. And what happens a lot of the time is that the sponsor doesn't listen. The sponsor is busy fixing. Mm. And the big part about what I do as a sponsor is I listen first. And then we begin to implement spiritual principles. But I need to, that's why I said, Johnny, lay it all out for me. Tell your story. And anytime I meet with sponsees, that's the way we start, is laid out. What's up? You know, tell me what's going on. And to have that bringing forth as the way we start that interaction. And then from there, we can start to pack in what are the spiritual principles that we're going to bring to bear here that can start to make this be different for you. And I think that's one of the most important things in sponsorship is listening. Not talking so much. Right. More right. Listening, less talking.
Right, right.
You because know, what you should, last thing I want to say here, and then I'll shut up for a second. When you were saying that sometimes you talk and you find yourself carrying the message to yourself, that you're the suffering addict who you carry the message to. And that's what happens with a lot of my sponsees when I let them talk, is that the solution comes forward while they're sharing.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
My first sponsor, when I started to sponsor someone, there's 2 things I wanted to jump on here. He told me that when I was all concerned about how to be a sponsor. And he said, when you're sponsoring somebody, the thing you need to remember is they already have their answer. And if you just let them ramble long enough, they'll come across it. And it's much more empowering for them if they come across that answer than it is if you tell them what the answer is. And that has been my experience. That has big time been my experience. But one of the greatest gifts one of my sponsors gave me was my sponsor in Kentucky, who was just as simple and practical and country as he could be. And he had some of the greatest little pearls of wisdom. I was having a bout with my suicidal ideations, and it was getting to where I couldn't drive to his house without fantasizing which tree I was going to drive into on the way to his house. But I couldn't tell him that because I was afraid, as you were saying, that I was afraid of how he would judge me with that. But finally, I said, man, I got to tell you. And I broke down and I told him about the trees and all that. And he looked at me, and this is the gift he gave me, and it was an incredible gift. He said, Johnny, I got nothing for you on that. He said, son, I have absolutely no experience in those kinds of thoughts. He said, no matter how bad things got for me, I never wanted to take myself out. But there's two things I can do for you. He said, I can sit here and listen as long as you want to talk. And I will do that. He said, if you need somebody that will give you feedback on that, because they've been there, I have friends in this fellowship that have been there. And I will take you to them and we will talk to them and you might be able to get some feedback. The freedom that he gave me when he let me know he wasn't going to judge me for that opened the door for me to say to him whatever I needed to say. It was incredible. Because so many want to do just what you were talking about. It's like, okay, this guy's got a problem. I need to fix this for him. And you can't. You really can't. So,
what's the sponsor's job? Share experience, strength, and hope.
Right, right.
Beautiful with his integrity that he did not step into where he didn't have experience. And that's what's different in the rooms of recovery than in psychotherapy.
Right. And my first sponsor also told me when I was just beginning to sponsor people myself, I went to him one day. And I said, I'm really afraid I'm going to mess this up. He said, you can't mess this up if you follow the directions. I said, what directions? He said, it's experience, strength, and hope, Johnny. If somebody comes to you with a situation, you have no experience in it, shut up. Just shut up. Don't try to tell them about something you don't know anything about. And later on, I ended up telling one of my sponsees, I tell you what, I won't tell you how to give birth to a penguin because I've never done that. So what I can do is share with you about the places I have been and did just for him what my sponsor did for me. I said, and if we need to talk to somebody, there's somebody in his fellowship that's been exactly where you are. So, and that's the beauty of our fellowships, all of the 12-step fellowships. And it goes back to that thing that I mentioned earlier, that true identification through honest communication fosters hope. And that's a beautiful thing.
Wow. Yep. It is a, it's how you cross the chasm, the moat, the hole between the first and the second step. You know, when I get powerless, that everything that I've used has landed me in jail, institutions are dead, that my best plans, my best coping. And to come to the understanding without, no matter how many years I have in recovery, that I cannot run my life, man, that's just, there's hopelessness in that. That's that there's bleak. That's it's, there's nothing to do. And that's when I cross the bridge to come to believe in things that are greater than me. And your love of me is greater than me. Another human being's love of me and willingness to reach out their hand is a power greater than myself that can help me find my way and not be a victim of this disease.
Well, I know you've helped so many people and you do so much. And I can never say, and I know I've said this two or three times already, but when we finish this call tonight, I will be on a cloud. I'll be on a cloud. And I'm one of those people that it's kind of like back when I was using. If I came across some good dope, I wanted to share it with all my friends. So when I come across some good stuff today that gets me excited about life, I can't wait to tell my friends about it. And I love that. I love that. And when I get to share with, whether I'm speaking at a meeting or teaching a class or doing whatever, and I get to see people go, aha, I'm not alone. I'm not alone. That was the biggest gift of my very first 12-step meeting was I realized in that first meeting that I was not alone. And I left that first meeting with the incredible sensation of I'm home. I finally made it home.
There's a luminary figure in the fellowship that I attend. He just recently died. And he said, one of his quotes that he said a lot, I remember hearing him share this back in the late 80s, is my number one defect of character is separating myself from the love of this fellowship.
Mm. Wow. Repeat that, please.
That's pretty good stuff, isn't it? my number one defect of character is separating myself from the love of this fellowship.
Yeah. And that goes back to what I had said earlier. That is hell. That especially,
yes, it is.
Especially once you've had a taste of heaven, once you've had a taste of connectivity with your fellow man, with your higher power, once you've tasted that and then you decide to throw that away, that is hell. Because at that point, you're no longer a victim to hell. You know, some part of you knows you made the choice to step back through the gates of hell.
And you know what's really bad is that I do that sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and that's why I keep coming to meetings.
Right.
Is that my life's gotten so good, I got to screw it up to stand to live in it from recovery. And I am still full on an addict.
The safest place in the world for me to be is when I'm standing in the space of I don't know. That's the safest place in the world for me because that's the only place I can learn anything. And once I decide I know, you can't tell me anything. Wow. Well, Eric, I know that unless you tell me that we won't do another one of these at some point, we will do another one of these at some point.
I'm happy to serve.
Because it's big. And I know that the people that listen to our shows, I've had a lot of people contact me and tell me, man, you guys helped me so much. And you know, what better feeling is there than knowing that you actually helped somebody just by running your mouth for a little while and sharing your soul and sharing your passion. This is my passion. So, Eric, tell the audience before we're going to have to shut her down here in just a minute. I know you got some place to go and I got some place to go. And I want you to tell our audience, and please, one thing that I've never asked you before, if I'm just somebody you just ran into in an elevator and you told me who you are and I said, well, I want to read one of your books, which book, knowing nothing about me, which book would you suggest for me to read?
I've got four coming out in the next year, but the one that's out now I would suggest is Forward Facing Trauma Therapy. It's on Amazon. It is a way to treat trauma without the institution. It is it's a self-help, spiritually based process for being able to treat traumatic stress without having to go back to the past. It's how you can live your life presently and resolve the symptoms of post-traumatic stress. And I am also the co-owner and vice president of Arizona Trauma Institute. That's aztrauma.org is our institution in Phoenix, and we do trainings across the spectrum in trauma and addiction. And my website is forwardfacing.com, forward-facing.com.
Great. Well, I want to say thank you to everybody. I want to say thank you to Mental Health Radio, News Radio Network, Mental Health News Radio Network, and Kristen Sinanta Walker for providing us a platform to have our shows. And I just want to thank all you listeners, and I ask you to come back, and you can find out anything about me and the other stuff that I'm doing on johnnycalloway.com. And I got a couple new books coming out. Please go check them out, and we hope to see you again the next time. Thank you so much. Happy New Year to everybody.
Happy New Year.
Okay, everybody, thanks for listening. Remember, never give up. Always keep it real and take time to smell the roses. And please sit down and watch a butterfly. Keep up with all that we are doing by going to morphintoanewyou.com. Thank you very much.